go on the record and come to order. The commission is hereby convened in open session Monday, April 25th, 2011, to consider the matter entitled Secretary of Labor versus Nally and Hamilton Enterprises, Inc. The docket number is Kent 2008-712. Present are myself, Chairman Jordan, Commissioner Duffy, Commissioner Cohen, and Commissioner Nakamura. Commissioner Young is participating by phone. We will start with an overview of the case presented by Stacy Dems Barrett of the Office of General Counsel. Good afternoon, Stacy.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman. Commissioners, this case involves a civil penalty proceeding arising under the Federal Mine Safety and Health Act of 1977. Nally and Hamilton Enterprises Incorporated operates the Chestnut Flats Surface Coal Mine in Bell County, Kentucky. From January 3rd to January 5th, 2008, MSHA Inspector David A. Faulkner conducted an inspection of the Chestnut Flats Mine. During the course of his inspection, Faulkner observed the production pit, a high-noise environment where trucks and loaders removed the overburden in order to expose the coal seam. Lube trucks that carried liquids such as fuel, oil, and antifreeze entered the area to service mobile equipment. While there, Faulkner observed a Mack lube truck service several vehicles in the area. At the same time, Faulkner noticed three of the operators whose trucks were being serviced standing adjacent to the mobile equipment on the opposite side of the lube truck. At 2:15 p.m., after the lube truck had completed servicing the mobile equipment, Faulkner inspected the lube truck and discovered that the backup alarm was not operational. The backup alarm warns individuals in noisy environments to avoid walking in the truck's path while it is moving in reverse. Also, the alarm is particularly important to pedestrians in the area because the tanks positioned on the back of the truck obstruct the operator's view. Because of the limited view, the truck operator must rely on his rear and side view mirrors when backing up. As a result of the inspection, Faulkner issued citation number 755-7475, alleging a significant and substantial violation of 30 CFR section 77.410C, which provides that warning devices shall be maintained in functional condition. According to the 6 a.m. pre-shift record, the alarm on the truck was working during the pre-shift examination. Inspector Faulkner also testified that he had no reason to believe that the alarm was not working at that time. Nally first learned of the malfunction alarm when it was sighted by Faulkner. Once it was aware of the hazard, the truck was taken out of service and fixed. Nally contested the citation and the matter proceeded to hearing before Judge Gerald Feller. Upon finding that the secretary had not demonstrated Nally's failure to maintain backup alarm in functional condition, the judge vacated the citation. In reaching his conclusion, he examined the definition of maintenance and citing Walker Stone Company 19-48, the judge noted that maintenance had been defined as the labor of keeping something in a state of repair or efficiency, care, or upkeep. He then concluded that it was necessary to determine the length of time that the alarm had been disabled in order to determine whether Nally had failed to keep the backup alarm in good working order. The judge recognized that the pre-shift examinations are a means of identifying defects that are in need of repair. As such, he relied on the pre-shift examination reports, which indicated that the backup alarm was working prior to the commencement of the shift. He also relied on Faulkner's opinion that the alarm had become dysfunctional sometime between 6 a.m. and 2:15 p.m. after the pre-shift examination on January 3rd. The judge found that there was no evidence that repair of the alarm was not performed in a timely manner. He reasoned that fundamental fairness dictates that a mine operator be given a reasonable period of time to address defects after they are noted by the pre-shift examiner, an opportunity unavailable to Nally in this case. The secretary subsequently filed a petition for discretionary review challenging the judge's vacature of the citation, which the commission granted. The secretary argues that the judge erred in finding that there was no violation because the plain meaning of maintain requires Nally to keep up, continue, and preserve from decline the functional condition of the backup alarm. She contends that an alarm is not kept up or contained in functional condition if it does not work, and that the inclusion of the word maintain in the standard includes an ongoing responsibility on the operator to ensure that warning devices be functional at all times. She also argues that the judge erroneously read into the standard a requirement that the operator be given a reasonable opportunity to address warning devices. This reading is not supported by the standard's language, and such a reading would encourage operators to continue use of equipment with an operative warning devices until the next required examination. Likewise, the secretary maintains that the judge's reading of a knowledge requirement into the regulation is also unsupported by the standards language, and that such a requirement is inconsistent with the no-fault scheme of the Act. She contends that in the event that the regulation's meaning is not plain, for her interpretation is owed deference because it is consistent with the terms of the standard and commission precedent, and it is compatible with the standard's purpose. She further asserts that Nally's argument that the standard lacks constitutional notice of what it requires should not be considered because Nally failed to raise this argument before the judge. In any event, she insists that Nally's argument fails because the standard's language gives adequate notice that the backup alarm is to be continuously maintained. If, however, fair notice is lacking, she asserts that her interpretation is not so far from a reasonable person's understanding of the standard that it could not have informed Nally of the agency's perspective. Nally responds that the judge properly vacated the citation because the word maintain is a verb and the words used in defining it are verbs. It asserts that to maintain requires some overt or affirmative act or occurrence, and the failure to maintain requires some willful inaction or omission. Because there is no evidence demonstrating that Nally engaged in any affirmative, willful inaction or omission constituting a failure to maintain the reverse warning device, it contends that there was no violation of the standard. The operator states that when it learned of the inoperative alarm, it immediately removed the equipment from service and repaired it, and that this immediate action constituted maintaining the device in functional condition. Nally also contends that it was an impossibility for it to perform an act of maintenance if it is without actual or constructive knowledge that the device is inoperative, and that due process requires that Nally be in a position to prevent an alleged violation before being charged with it under the Act. Finally, Nally states that the Secretary's interpretation is not owed deference because due process precludes deference from validating the application of a regulation that fails to give fair warning of the conduct it prohibits or requires. The issue on review is whether the judge erred in finding no violation of 30 CFR section 77.410C, which requires that warning devices be maintained in functional condition. At this point, I'm happy to take any questions from the commissioners.
Thank you, Stacy. We'll start off with Commissioner Cohen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And thank you, Stacy, for a very good decisional memo. This is a case which calls on us to interpret the meaning of the phrase maintain in functional condition in section 77.410C as applied to backup alarms on mobile equipment. It is important to note that this is not a trivial requirement. I've noticed that a number of fatalities in the mining industry involve miners who are inadvertently hit by mobile equipment. Essentially, we are called upon to determine whether the word maintain applies to the moment when the inspector sees the non-functional equipment, or whether, as the judge found, there must be some period of time during which the equipment must be non-functional before a violation can be found. Our first inquiry here is whether the standard has a plain meaning. If the meaning is plain, it must be applied. Here I believe that the standard of maintain in functional condition does have a plain meaning. The Commission has not previously interpreted Section 77.410C, but it has interpreted the word maintain in other contexts. For example, in Lopke Quarries, 23 Femschrick at 705, the Commission addressed a requirement to maintain safe access to conveyor belts in a rock crushing plant. The Commission noted that the word maintain is defined as to uphold, keep up, continue, or preserve a safe condition. As the Commission stated, quote, the word maintain in the standard thus incorporates an ongoing responsibility on the part of the operator to ensure safe access, as opposed to a purely passive approach in which an operator initially provides safe access and then has no further responsibility. The same analysis is applicable to the word maintain in the context of maintaining backup alarms on mobile equipment. The operator has an ongoing responsibility to maintain the backup alarms in functional condition. However, the judge added another requirement to his analysis. The judge stated that to analyze a failure to maintain citation, quote, requires determining the length of time of the backup alarm malfunction, unquote. However, the standard does not require that the equipment be non-functional for any given period of time. The judge's time requirement is not part of the standard. Moreover, as the Secretary points out, the judge's interpretation conflicts with the principles that there can be no liability under the Mine Act without the operator's knowledge of the problem, and that there can be liability under the Mine Act without the operator's knowledge of the problem and without regard to fault. The judge's finding that at the time of the pre-shift examination the backup alarm was functional is certainly relevant to the issue of the degree of the operator's negligence. However, it is not relevant to the violation itself. The operator raises the issue of notice. I conclude that because the meaning of the regulation is plain and requires that backup alarm systems on mobile equipment be functional at all times, there is no problem here with lack of notice. I would reverse the judge's decision, find that a violation of Section 77.410C has been established, and remand the case for findings on the issue of S&S and for the setting of an appropriate penalty.
Thank you, Commissioner Cohen. Let me just check. Commissioner Young, are you able to hear everything all right?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I heard it all.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from Commissioner Nakamura.
Yes, I also wish to thank Stacy for a very informative decisional memorandum. That was very helpful. I also would reverse the judge's determination that the operator did not violate Section 77.410C and would also remand the case for further proceedings on the S&S, whether the violation was S&S and for the assessment of the civil penalty. In looking at the ALJ's decision, it seems to me that he looked at the standard and looked at the word maintain. And limited its meaning to, it seems like, the actual physical activity of performing maintenance or repair work on the automatic backup warning device. If you look at his decision, the first thing he does in his analysis is not define the word maintain, but he defines the word maintenance as performing labor or repair on a device. And then he frames the issue as being a proper maintenance issue. And it seems to me, in doing that, he's hoping that the obligation to maintain the backup warning device under this section only requires this sort of discrete act of maintenance on the device itself, and during this, for only a discrete period of time, while the maintenance is being performed, and thus he finds that if the device was working at the time of the pre-shift, the operator could not have violated the standard unless a repair was not performed in a timely manner once it had knowledge of the defect. In other words, there was no obligation to do maintenance until he had knowledge. They had knowledge that it was a defect. And so I think the problem with this reading is that there's no such limitation in the standard. I think, as Commissioner Cohen said, it's clear that what maintain in this section means is not the actual performance of maintenance, but there's this ongoing responsibility to assure that the device is correctly functioning. And our case precedent, in particular the case cited by Commissioner Cohen, Lop v. Quarries, in that case, the commission, stated that the word maintain, although not defined in the regs, in Webster's Third New International Dictionary, defined it as upholding, keep up, continue, or preserve from decline. So the dictionary definition certainly indicates that there's a continuing obligation, and maintenance doesn't end or maintaining does not end when the actual performance of maintenance on a particular device has ended. The obligation continues. If there's a failure in the device, then there hasn't been a continuing functionality of the device, and there's a violation. That Lockheed decision also, as Commissioner Cohen pointed out, did use the words that the word maintain incorporates an ongoing responsibility on the part of the operator to ensure, in this particular case, that the device is working at all times. So I think the way the judge analyzed this sort of compelled him to include a knowledge requirement. And as our cases have shown, we have strict liability under the Act. Knowledge is not required, and I think he erred in finding that knowledge was required under this particular section. And there is a reason for that. If the operator is obligated to continually ensure that the device is working, then I think it's obvious that he's going to be more vigilant in the way that he makes sure that safety devices are working. And as Commissioner Cohen's pointed out, the backup device, backup warning device, is an important safety device that can, in a busy mind, when people are thinking of other things, if a large piece of equipment is backing up and there's no warning, miners can easily get hurt. So I feel that the standard is clear, that there is no notice or due process issue. And I would, again, find that reverse the judge and find that the operator did violate Section 77410C.
Thank you, Commissioner Nakamura. Commissioner Young?
I would like to join my colleague in thanking Stacey for the excellent decisional memorandum. And I would agree with the conclusions of my colleagues. And just a couple additional observations here. It's possible to be right and wrong at the same time. And I think in this case, the judge observed that fundamental fairness would require giving the operator an opportunity to correct the defect that hadn't been noted on the pre-shift examination because it was in working condition at that time. However, fundamental fairness is a concept that's not required to, and in fact may be alien to, a strict liability regulatory regime such as the Mine Act. And so for that reason, I would also vacate the judge's holding and remand the case for determination of S&S and the penalty. In terms of the language itself, it seems very clear that this is one of the numerous standards of the Mine Act, which is drawn up with an objective in mind, and the objective is not maintenance of equipment. The objective is keeping equipment in good functioning condition. And that's the requirement and the standard that must be met under the Mine Act and its strict liability provisions, which can seem unfair and unforgiving, but that's toward the end of protecting miners from harm and requiring that operators be vigilant, not just when they're required to conduct examinations compelled under the Act, but at all times on their operation. So I think that is the definition under the clear language of the statute that should be applied. On the subject of definitions, words can have more than one meaning, and two have been cited here. You could look at another example and say when someone says train for a marathon, it doesn't mean taking yourself to Boston. It means to prepare yourself and go out and do the work necessary to run a marathon. So in this case, maintain, I think, means keep, just as when you're talking about a student pilot on a check ride who's told to maintain altitude and airspeed. It means keep it where it is. That's his objective. That's what he's going to be judged against. And so it is with this regulatory provision here. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Young. Commissioner Duffy.
Madam Chairman, I will relieve some of the suspense and join my colleagues in reversing the judge's finding of no violation, but first I would also commend Stacy on an excellent decisional memorandum. As Stacy has indicated, this is apparently the first time that the commission has dealt with the application of this particular standard, although other commission judges in similar circumstances have found a violation where Judge Feldman did not. The issue of liability raised by the operator revolves around whether the requirement to maintain a backup alarm in functional condition must rely on a finding that the operator has knowledge of the defective alarm. On the basis of other cases where the commission has construed the duty to maintain equipment in good working order, I conclude that knowledge of the defective alarm is not required. Thus, even if a pre-shift examination does not reveal a defective backup alarm, an operator can be found to violate Section 75410C if the defect is subsequently discovered by the IMSHA inspector. I don't see this as a burdensome requirement, particularly with respect to the specific mechanical component here. Anyone within hearing distance of a construction site or a loading zone knows the strident sound of a backup alarm. So if one is not functioning, it should be obvious to the operator of the equipment. That is especially the case if the alarm was functioning at the start of the shift. And while I suspect that a chorus of backup alarms among several pieces of mobile equipment at such a site as the one in this case might cause equipment operators to tune the alarms out or not notice that one is not functioning, the standard by its plain meaning is clear. The alarms must be operating at all times. That is, they must be maintained in working order as long as the mobile equipment is in use, and regardless of the operable condition of the alarms at the beginning of the shift. So I, too, would reverse and remand the matter for further findings with respect to S&S and an appropriate penalty. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Duffy. I also would thank Stacy for your decision memorandum. It was very helpful. And I also would join in my colleagues in finding that I would reverse the judge on his finding of no violation and remand for consideration of the penalty and the S&S designation. I really don't have much to add. I think the observations of my colleagues have pretty much covered the analysis here. I think that the standard is plain. It does require that the backup alarm be always in a functioning condition. The operator's argument that the violation could occur only if the operator had been aware that the backup alarm was not functioning and willfully allowed it to continue to be in that non-functioning condition has been rejected by the commission in its interpretation of other standards and because of the strict liability nature of the Mine Act. So really that's really all I have to say on this, and I think we are unanimous in our conclusion in this matter. Did anybody have, Stacy, did you have any questions or need for clarification from us to draft the opinion? Did anybody else have anything further to say? Okay. With that, we will adjourn. Thank you very much.